This is Good Show with Ennis and Bunkus.
This one's good!
On Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Hey, it's Thursday. It's Good Show. It's Ben Ennis. It's J.D. Bunkus, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. How are you? It's a one-way medium, so you can't respond. I'm well. How are you, J.D. Bunkus?
I'm quite well. I rip you a lot for being a parent. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
Over-exaggerating how hard it was?
That sounds funny. It's like, I rip you for, you know, not only bringing life into this world, but then nurturing it to adolescence and then full adulthood. Yeah. Like, oh, I make fun of you for that.
No, I make fun of you more for the way you state the difficulty of such a thing. Like, a lot, in case you haven't noticed, you open up your blinds every once in a while. You step outside of your bubble and you'll notice that the world is full of people. And how did they get there, sir? They got there from surviving childhoods, right?
Yeah, well.
Yeah, listen.
We
do this with the radio show sometime, right? Time will pass. It depends. What you do at that time is.
Not to totally derail you, but yeah. Whenever my wife and I were having problems with our children or like we felt like we were doing a bad job, it's like, crackheads have children, right? Mm-hmm. And not all of them grow up to be crackheads. Like, some of them, like, totally neglect their children. They grow up okay. So, like, even when we can't do our...
Yeah, crack babies is a myth.
Even when we're doing our best and we come up short, like, it would probably be okay. That's true. What you're saying is true.
Right. What you're doing is not that hard. It's hard to do well.
Yeah. I mean, anyone can do it. But, yeah, it's, like, the degree to which you want to do it.
But even when people do it well, you've met great parents with a crappy kid. No offense to my friend Jeff, whose parents are sweethearts. They're, like, the salt of the earth. And he used to yell at them when we were kids. Like, it was literally that Chris Rock skit from Bigger and Blacker, where he's, like, when he went to his white friend's house, and he was like, I hate you, Dad. I hate you, Mom. And it's like, that was my friend Jeff growing up. Like, he would just do that.
Yeah, that's horrible.
Yeah.
No, you're right. Genetics, you're right.
Right. So some of it is, like, out of your control. It doesn't matter what you do, how good you are. Yesterday, one of my best friends, Doug Spooner, had a pair of twins.
Annabelle. He had four kids?
Is that how you say it?
No, he had twins.
He had twins?
A pair of twins would be four children.
Okay, you're right. I don't want to get bogged down. Listen, semantics talk is your corner, so I'm not going to fight
you. Me and Mike Wilner, we got really upset when you said a pair of twins right there.
You and Mike Wilner. Wilner, anyway, I don't get it. You are slowly becoming him, but that's okay. So I go visit the twins, Annabelle and Alice Marie, who, beautiful little girls, cute. It's nice to go to a hospital for good reasons.
Yeah.
Like, to be excited to go to the hospital is a very foreign feeling.
Yeah,
like you're in there and you're seeing everyone on a lot of times their worst day or bad day. And I'm going in there all bubbly, like, I get to see some babies, my friend's babies. And I had to hold these babies I didn't have to. I wanted to.
Yeah, okay.
I wanted to hold the babies. Good but start. Because they're twins, you know, you want to hold both. You're not just like bonding with the one. And to me, it's a big deal. Like, I've known them their whole lives. No big deal. Like, they've known me like half of their lives because they were born the day before. So I'm holding these babies, and I'm doing it for... I stuck around for a couple of hours, like, holding the babies. My back started to hurt. A
couple of hours.
And I thought to myself, like, man, this is... Yeah, we're really good friends, and I can read a room. I can read a room, buddy. I knew I was wanted there.
Okay, because I was going to say, like, the day after...
It was 2 days.
Yeah, a couple of hours. Okay, go on.
You can quibble with it all you want.
All right.
Facts are facts. There was no way that I was not wanted there. So I'm holding these babies for a long time. My back started hurting. I don't even know how people keep them alive from that point. Like, holding the babies is hard.
Dude.
That's hard work. Even when I was sitting down, I'm, like, trying to switch up the positions. If you have to hold a baby, like, my experience holding babies has been very limited to, here's my 35 seconds to 2 minutes. And this was the first time I put in a real shift, like a hour plus of holding a baby shift. And I left there thinking, I'm either really old or this is really hard. But as always, it's probably somewhere closer to the middle where that's a something holding a baby. So that's a tough mutter. Like, they should have an event or something.
I wish I was more physically active and I go through spurts where, like, I get on the treadmill and I want to do more, though, especially at this time of year where it's so hard to get outside. Like, just you feel better. You exercise more. I don't do a lot, though. I really don't. And I wish I did more. And I'm not I'm not the most in shape guy in the world. I contend I would be at least 300 pounds if I didn't have children, because so much of my day is the physical exertion. And I live in a home that's not big. It's a semi-detached house, but it has three. Right, it goes up, right? It has three floors, not including the basement, in which they play sometimes. And I'm carrying children up and down flights of stairs every single day. Went grocery shopping yesterday. Guess who can't walk from the car to the grocery store? Mm-hmm. And guess how many seats the cart had in the grocery store? One. How many children I have? Two. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? I'm carrying a child around for an hour.
Mm-hmm.
It's insane. And that, no offense to the twins. I'm sure they were heavy, but, you know.
They're big. They're big girls.
Yeah, so what? They're 7 pounds each, maybe?
Know. I think a little less, actually. Right.
Guess how much my one-year-old weighs?
I don't know.
20-plus pounds. Yeah. 22 pounds. Imagine carrying that around for an hour, buddy.
I can't. Here's what I've never really thought about. You know, when I work out, I'm just doing glamour workouts. You know?
Yeah.
If we're, like, really doing the Who's in Shape challenge.
Right.
There's a real chance that I'd be putting a huge amount of risk on the line here.
You've heard the term dad strength, right?
Yeah.
Where do you think that comes from?
That's just like
you have, yeah, like, you have a kid and like all of a sudden God touches the top of your head and you get muscles. Yeah. No. You accumulate those muscles through years of picking things up.
Yeah.
I have dad strength.
See, I thought dad strength was more, yeah, you know, the stories about, and a mother saw her son pinned under a bus. That's and she different. Lifted up the bus and different. You go, wow, you know, remember Chicken Noodle Soup for the Soul? It was like basically yes. There'd be like whole editions on. And then this kid was in trouble. And then right. This guy was like coming through and he lifted up the tractor. Yeah. And you're like, right on, dad. Mm-hmm. I thought you would be able to have like a small burst because the love in your heart just accesses some adrenaline gland that the rest of us who don't really care about anything or are completely apathetic just don't have.
Maybe. I've never, luckily.
But maybe. No,
never been in that situation. But it's also this. It's also the day. Not a day goes by.
Yeah.
In which I'm not routinely lifting 20-pound weights like with both arms.
You look at Ben Ennis and you think how he even gets out of bed in the morning. He looks so weak. And, like, he just looks like a total, like, this guy doesn't even take care of himself. When's the last time this guy's been in a gym? Pah, never. Never, ever, ever.
Nobody
how could
that.
Such an unathletic-looking guy dare talk about sports?
No.
And yet here we stand today.
Nobody
and
that.
Maybe, you know, don't judge a book by its cover.
First of all, nobody looks at me. And
everyone would say that about you, and here we are today. Don't judge a book by its cover. We'll talk about the Raptors. We got Will Liu coming up. I watched the Raptors game with my mom. She was in town for two nights.
Huge basketball fan.
Huge,
your mom.
But that's it. Is like, it's a balancing act of being happy for her with her celebrations on every single play.
Yeah.
And me remembering that, you know, this woman raised you. And then the dad strength thing that we just talked about and carrying the babies and how hard that is. To just like, yeah, I'm happy for her. I was happy that she was so happy. I wish I kind of watched sports that same way.
Yeah, you can't. You really can't. When you watch sports in multiple games every day, you would be exhausted.
I don't know how she's not more exhausted by the end of the game.
she's literally,
we're in the
she's
second
doing like
quarter.
Physical exaltations.
We're in the second quarter and she's like criticizing people's defense on every possession and like every rebound is critical, you know, like anyway, so it was really fun. It was nice to have her for a couple of nights and watch a couple of games with
it
her.
It was nice to have one of those sporting days where
there were moments.
Yeah. But it was like a communal viewing experience and it was kind of unexpected. I mean, we knew Zion was going to debut yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
It was unexpected how nobody knew how it was going to go.
Well, this is the transition is the game ends and I tell my mom, hey, it's great. We're going to watch Zion. So I pull up Sportsnet Now Plus and I throw the game on and I'm very excited to see Zion, right? He's there. There's a little bit of hype. There's palpitation in the building. You're seeing him warm up, and you're looking at this, and you're saying, like, yeah, this is going to be fun. This is going to be real fun. And he plays for 3 minutes, and then he hits the bench.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, he had an assist. He missed a bunny. He had a turnover. I'm not going to judge anything. I'm sure he'll be back soon. He comes back out, and he only plays another few minutes and scores. And you're like, okay, it's good. Shows a little flash of athleticism. Essentially, you're going into the fourth quarter of this game with 5 points from Zion Williamson and an overwhelmingly underwhelming debut.
Four turnovers in 12 minutes.
Yeah, I don't agree with that being part of jitters. I think you do. I think that the one thing I'll say about Zion is it was tough for me to differentiate between him looking comfortable, like he didn't look rattled at all to me, but also I remembered that the only times I've really seen him have been on big stage and big event, high event games, like we're coming off the tournament. So I'm just used to seeing him on national television. I'm used to seeing him be an event. But he comes out in the fourth quarter, and he just starts lighting them up. He drills four threes. He's making really athletic rebounds. He's getting around the basket where, like, he misses a shot, but then he does the classic Zion thing where he's like, I'm a spring. Yeah. I'm a human spring. I'm going to get that ball before you do, even though, like, you're on your feet when I was in the air.
Right.
Doesn't matter. I'm Zion. You haven't heard. This game's about me for this exact reason, sir.
Had one incredible blow-by on the baseline.
Yeah. He was awesome. And you and I were texting at this point because we're just texting about how much we love Zion. There's no breakdowns of anything. It's not high level intelligent sports talk for the people who are curious.
You don't think my tweet of I would die for Zion was an intelligent conversation?
No, but essentially you were sharing the exact. So you workshopped that with me and then you tweeted that out. That's good. You really thought that went through. So he's brilliant. And we're kind of having this conversation of, well, he played early in the quarter. How are they going to handle him? They take him out and they sit him for the rest of the game. Despite, I think they tied the game or they were down two.
He was 4 for 4 from three, despite never making more than 3 three-pointers in any game in his college career.
Yeah, NBA three. He's all of a sudden like, yeah, this is my thing.
So he makes the fourth three that gives them a 1-point lead.
Yeah.
He scored 16 straight points.
Yeah.
So, for the New Orleans Pelicans, who are also giving it up on the defensive end because they are a sieve.
So it's 3 minutes of just bliss and basketball bliss, just magic. And you're sitting there going, please, Pelicans, please, Alvin Gentry, don't do. I'm not going to do what everybody thinks I'm going to do. And let's freak out, man. And he freaks out and he takes Zion out of the game. And we're all just kind of sitting there with this completely anticlimactic finish where Zion is not a part of it. And I get it from their standpoint, right? They gave him a pitch count. They would have said, these are the amount of minutes that he gets. It's a coordination between all the layers of the organization, right? You've got a once-in-a-lifetime blue chipper in Zion Williamson. You got to make sure that he's okay. I thought that was a farce. I thought this is the era we now live in with sports where we can't see Zion Williamson play for 4 more minutes. We can't put him back on the floor to close the final two. Like, I get the Kevin Durant thing happened. But this is what I asked. Do you remember when I asked Grange about this? Like, do you get a sense that teams around the league are handling players differently in the post-KD era?
Yeah.
And this was the first time I thought of this, like, wow, this is not, that was not irresponsible to Zion Williamson to put him out there for 2 more minutes. And I was the first person to chastise the Warriors. Letting that guy play and giving fans their ticket and letting that guy try to win ball games, a guy who played and still stuck it in with college after he blew out his shoe and after he got hurt and everyone wanted him to basically hang him up and not play college basketball anymore because only do it for a paycheck. He's the type of guy who went back to college, kept playing ball, and didn't give a crap about those things because he's a baller and he wants to win and he wants to play in games. And to sit down to your guy like that in a huge moment and when the world is watching and just sap the entertainment out of what is an entertainment product was a dark harbinger of things to come.
So we agree, but we disagree. So I agree that the New Orleans Pelicans are at extreme fault for how that was handled yesterday. But I disagree with the aspect that they were at fault with. Because obviously there was a clear plan. And there was a hard and fast number that they were not going over. And I get it. I mean, this is the first overall pick. It's the future of your freaking franchise. He's missed half the season already. It's his return. He weighs 1 million pounds.
I understand all those things. Can I just jump in for 1 second? Well, there's no evidence. Like, there's no proof that, like, if you play an extra minute here. Like, this is the same thing with pitchers and their arms. It's like, okay, sure, you say this amount of innings. How did you determine that? They're like, well, never.
We're guessing. I mean, to make the baseball comparison, it's like, yeah, and even the most stringent rules on guys, I mean, Jabba Chamberlain,
yeah,
Tommy John, Steven Strasburg, Tommy John, doesn't matter, right? Yeah, nobody knows. You're right. But you have to have some sort of plan. Mm-hmm. The plan was wrong. The plan is asinine. Like, you never considered the possibility that, hey, you know what? The guy that people are pegging as a generational talent in this league could come in, play really well, and we could hold our own against the San Antonio Spurs, who are not exactly, you know, the Milwaukee Bucks of 2020, that we might actually have a chance to win this game and that Zion would be a big part of it, and we'd want him playing in the dying seconds of the fourth quarter. Play the number of minutes you want him to play. Have them set up so that he's playing the last 5 minutes of the fourth quarter. Like, how is that too far, like, the big brain thinking?
Well, here's the problem. They're not in the game if not for Zion's play.
Exactly. But, I mean,
so
maybe he gets them.
It's a catch 22. No, like, but you're either out of it or you're in it. Like,
so you just, so he didn't play the last 5 minutes of the game, right?
That's why I'm just saying, so just let him play the last 5 minutes of the damn game.
But that's the thing. So just slide the minutes back. So they make the run 5 minutes later, right?
I know, but now we're acting like that. It happens exactly the same way if they're already, like, more points down or who knows. Like, Zion saved that game. They were getting scooped, and then all of a sudden he picks them up and he brings them to life in the beginning of the fourth quarter.
Right. Yeah.
I just don't think that it's a guarantee. Anyway,
okay,
this
nothing's
is the butterfly effect thing where it's like, if you put him in later, what's the score of the game?
Okay, but yeah. So what? So maybe they're in the game without him before. Like, they never anticipated the possibility of trying to win a game and Zion Williamson giving them the best chance to win that game. Like, that never crossed anybody's mind. And I did think about Steven Strasburg, how they're like, we're going to limit his innings. Oh, God, we're going to make the play. Oh, God, we got to shut him down. It's the playoffs. We never anticipated we'd be, oh, no. This is bad. Now we don't have Steven Strasburg.
This is also kind of the lesson for the Blue Jays with their handling of Nate Pearson.
Yep.
Is like, if you don't want him hitting a certain amount of innings, and fans will be pissed about it, especially if the Jays are good out of the gate, right? If they're pitching pretty well and they're hitting, and all of a sudden Pearson it's past the date where he's supposed to come up for, I don't know, whatever the contract circumvention date is this year, this time around.
They should, like, just have it right in the calendar. Yeah. Contract circumvention date. And everybody celebrates.
Not? Honestly, yeah, like, just put it out there.
If you checked your iPhone,
fridge magnet.
It says, today is the contract circumvention date.
Yeah. Oh, damn. I got a long form. I want to talk about Eli, but I don't think we have time to do it because the Raptors also happened last night. And it was a huge game. Like, I think there's a case that the Lakers game was the most fun win of the season because they were on the road and the bench group ended up taking over. And
such a surprise.
Yeah, there have been some good wins this year. But that, even everyone wants to point out that there was no Joel Embiid and that Richardson got hurt. But I kind of thought that was their best win of the year.
That's interesting because they did have a home win against the first return of the Sixers to Toronto was a good win too. And Embiid played in that game and he was held pointless. But that was fun.
But that was the difference, is that Embiid just murdered them in that contest. And in this one, the Raptors got this. Like, I don't mean murdered the Raptors. I mean murdered his own team.
Yeah, okay.
He was so bad.
Yeah.
And
I mean, Marc Gasol had something to do with that.
Absolutely he did. Praise Marc Gasol.
Yes.
No?
Dude.
Would you like to say sorry to Marc Gasol?
Well, if Marc Gasol is going to score digits in 4 of 5 since his return, and after going 3 of 20, scoring double digits before that injury?
I've told you before that Marc Gasol is intelligent basketball Rorschach test. If you look at Marc Gasol and you think, he can't score inside. He's not old Marc Gasol. It's like, this is not
the
game.
But he's doing that now.
Yeah, but he's doing that, but he's done it only a couple, like, He gave his team what his team needed last night.
Yeah.
And that was a couple of those buckets. But you know what's most impressive about Marc Gasol?
He didn't even finish the game yesterday.
If you cut to the basket and you get a sliver, Marc Gasol is going to hit you.
That's right.
Marc Gasol, as that, like, pivot point in the high post running your offense, is the most efficient that the Raptors look. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the best way the Raptors look, is when Marc Gasol has the ball in the high post and the Raptors' long athletes are cutting to the basket. That's what I want to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's amazing. Like, I'm not going to speak ill of Marc Gasol, okay?
If
you're trying to trick me into saying something negative about Marc Gasol, it's not going to happen.
I think Marc Gasol is my favorite Raptor that I've ever watched. Like, he is the most entertaining Raptor for me to watch personally.
I'll take Kawhi Leonard. That's just me.
Yeah. No, I know.
I'll take Kawhi Leonard.
Listen,
that's fine.
Kawhi Leonard brought me the most joy, but in terms of night in, night out, like, the way that that person plays, it's Gasol.
Yeah,
even when Nurse did the right thing of keeping Serge Ibaka in that game last night because of the way he was defending Horford and the way that he was playing, he gets that monster steal. That was basically the dagger in that game, was Ibaka grabbing that ball, getting out in transition, getting the N1. Mm-hmm. I still wanted to see Gasol. I love watching him play basketball. He's just a genuine treat to watch. Even if the Raptors sucked, I wouldn't mind having Gasol. Even if you're a Grizzlies fan, you must be thinking, why didn't we keep Gasol? How fun would Gasol be with Ja Morant right now? What did we get in that trade? Half a season of DeLon Wright and CJ Miles and, like, JV. Why did we do this trade? Like, what exactly was the point here? Oh, I guess to give Mark, set him free?
Yeah, no, it's not unlike the Warriors at the peak of their powers, where you wanted to see them lose all the time, but you're like, no, that's what basketball should be about. It should be about sharing the ball. It should be about eye-pleasing play. And yeah, Marc Gasol definitely does that. So there's a lot of Raptors we haven't gotten to. We'll get to that next with Will Liu. But we have your chance to see both Toronto teams back-to-back in April with our VTech wake-up call contest. The prize includes tickets to see the Leafs, Raptors, hotel accommodations, and Hockey Hall of Fame tickets. All you need to do is call 416-413-4141 at any time and leave us your best Toronto sports take. Visit sportsnet.ca/590 or call 416-413-4141 for more details. When we come back, the aforementioned Will Liu of Yahoo. It's Good Show. Ben Ennis, J.D. Bunkus, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Now, more of Good Show with Ennis and Bunkus on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Good Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Ennis, J.D. Bunkus. I mean, Raptors, despite spending the entire season, like, everybody's missed time, save for TD2, right? Like, that's the only guy hasn't missed a single game this season, and they are now one game back of the Miami Heat for a second in the Eastern Conference. It's wild. Let's bring on Will Liu of Yahoo. Hey, Will, thanks for doing this.
Hey, thanks for having me.
We were just discussing where that ranks amongst the Raptors' wins this season. Where would you put it?
I mean, they've had some pretty damn good wins this season.
Yep.
It's weird because they didn't play that well in the first half, and you're surprised they're even tied. But it's just one of those situations where, I mean, Philly's banged up, but also the Raptors' defense is just that good. Like, man, Philly shot 30% from the second, third, and fourth quarter. Yeah. Like, you're not ever going to win a game shooting 30% from the field. So
this is the reason to have the most faith in them, right? Is that their defensive identity is so good. Like, they plucked Marc Gasol from their roster, and you thought, oh man, what are they going to look like? And Ibaka steps in, and their defensive rating, I think, over that stretch without all the starters was still top five. Like, even if you deplete dudes from this team, they still have the type of players who can go out there and get stops, who get rebounds, and now can turn up in transition and get buckets. So the baseline for this team seems to be pretty clear, but it's about seeing the ceiling versus these teams, right? Like, beating the Phillies, or the Phillies of the world, the Bostons of the world, beating teams of that caliber. And so I want to run a take by you and see what you think about it, or how you interpret this. Is like, all I was thinking about last night watching Pascal Siakam is he is both the biggest red flag and yet the biggest reason for optimism when it comes to beating these teams in the playoffs.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, he is, when you're talking about ceiling, Pascal Siakam determines this team's ceiling. It's great what Norm is doing right now. It's incredible. He's 20 points every night, even off the bench. And Kyle and Fred are great. And Mark is really turning around. He didn't miss a shot last night. And you know what Mark and Serge are going to give you, but it's really that piece right there is Pascal Siakam. He needs to, like, just... He needs to create offense. He needs to be tough. He needs to basically be undeniable, because that's what makes a great playoff team, is you have one of those guys that can sort of not carry your offense, but when everything else isn't going, you can go to that one guy and give you offense like Kawhi. And maybe it's a little unfair to hold Pascal to such a high standard already, but the reality is that he is that star in this team. And, I think we've seen it. Right, this season, we've seen Pascal sort of take it to that next level. We haven't seen it since he's come back from the groin injury. And I think you got to give him a little bit of time, too, because that's just a tricky injury to come back from. And so much of Pascal's game is athleticism and burst and quickness. If you don't fully trust your leg just because you just came back from injury, you might not be as good. But 8-23 is still a hard line to look at.
Yeah, it's not great, but I do look at the 23, though, aspect of that and think that's a positive, because since he's come back, he's really just not – he's not had the field goal attempts, right? Do you see a step in the right direction that at least he's getting back to his high usage rate?
Yeah, in a way. I thought, honestly, yesterday, the team offense was working pretty well. So there wasn't as much of a need for him to get to the 23-point mark in terms of the field goal attempts. But, you know, after watching back a couple of the plays, I do think he really was fouled by at least four or five of these. And so the field goal attempts should really be a lot lower and the free throw attempts should be a lot higher. Part of the process for being a superstar is, you know, learning how to play through contact and also learning how to play with contact. Like, if you think about it, he took 23 field goal attempts. He only got two free throws. Like, that's just – Even if he was making his field goal attempts, that's still a really, really low number. And those two free throw attempts came after Nick Nurse challenged the call, and the call was reversed. So really, those were retroactively applied free throws. I think that's one of the parts of Pascal's game that if you're going to be efficient with your scoring and if you're going to be the best version of yourself as a scorer, you need to get to the free throw line more. And his free throw rate is pretty low for someone who goes to the rim so much. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I'm not sure you can control or fix over the course of half a season, but it would definitely be nice if he can get to the free throw line a little bit more.
Well, I think part of it is that when he gets to the rim, he's blowing by people a lot of times. Like, he's mm-hmm. just, he's in so clean that sometimes people and referees look at it and they're like, oh, okay, he wasn't touched because look how fluid he looked going to the basket. The other part of it is that a lot of the way his attacking style when he's going towards contact at times, and I've mentioned this before with Ben, is, you know, he'll throw it up off the glass and he'll kind of fade mm-hmm. away from the basket rather than going into contact. Yeah, but I also think that there's definitely a measure of the league is not used to officiating him in that regard, and that, yeah, eventually things will kind of, it'll find its level a little bit more as Siakam's inside game evolves and as referees watch more and more of him and become more accustomed to him. And I don't know what their process is of watching videos when they miss calls, but as they try and get better, I guess, too. But, man, it just – the one credit I'll give him is it really does feel like – it. Like with Norm, we're saying he's outside in. Like when the three is dropping, everything looks so much easier on the inside. And with Siakam, it just still feels like to me he's got to find a way to get back to that guy who's driving, who's getting inside, who's getting those floaters, and then creating for others. And then kind of like the jump shot is still a bonus. Like,
well,
go ahead.
It is a little strange because there's a couple of possessions yesterday where he had a good chance to post up, you know, whether he had a mismatch against like Korkmaz or Rondo. These guys can't guard him one-on-one at all. He had a chance to post these guys up, but it seemed strange almost that the offense sort of called for him to receive the ball above the three-point arc and to have him face up instead. I mean, he can still attack face up, but it definitely seems like a point of emphasis for their team to, you know, get him from the three-point line and attacking inward, which is, I guess, a little strange in a way. You know, he's definitely developed in that front. If you just compare his three-point numbers from above the arc from last season as compared to this year, it's a huge jump. But I agree, his bread and butter is still in the post. And I don't know, I feel like Raptors could probably emphasize that a little bit more. I feel like early in the season they were doing that a lot more, and that's when he was scoring like 30. Mm-hmm. But yeah, now if he's not really hitting the three, which I think he's 5 of 25 since coming back from injury.
Yeah.
If he's not hitting the three, then yeah, you got to get him inside.
Yeah, the three hasn't been dropping, and we've seen him kind of go away from that in certain games where it's not falling and he's not as confident. And that's what I loved about last night's close is, you're right, they didn't necessarily need his offense. But if you looked mm-hmm. at those final few plays, it was like he gets his floater from deep in the paint, like that little turnaround hook, and then yep. he draws a foul, and then he gets out in transition with his speed, and he finds Fred VanVleet, drops it off to him for a three, hits the hot shooter. Like, that's the type of stuff that you want to see from Siakam is, even when you're frustrated, even when shots aren't falling for you, that you're still looking for it late, and you're still trying to be the head of the snake, because like we were saying, like, that's the ceiling of this team, is they still need Siakam to be this group's closer most nights mm-hmm. against the top-tier teams. It's just, how do you find that balance of where are you getting his best shots? How are you keeping him as engaged as possible? I thought Nurse, I don't know, maybe I read too much into the padding of Siakam. Where
yeah,
he's like,
no, I think everybody did.
Yeah, but I did, but I was like, good, they didn't take him out of the game. Gasol had played awesome in the first half. I thought there was maybe a case, the way that Siakam was going, that you'd take him out and put in Gasol and go big, and he stuck with him and he rewarded him. So I don't know. To me, it's progress, but you still need to see more. And that's why yesterday was like, I don't know, ended up being such an encouraging game for me.
Yeah, I was also encouraged. Yeah, I mean, you just got to beat these top six teams. I mean, top four, really, in the Eastern Conference. They just don't have enough wins against them. And the Sixers are the only team now that they actually have a winning record against of those top four teams.
Right. So, Will, like that, to me, that's what it is, right, is watching Siakam in these big games against big opponents. and I'm sure it's one of the biggest ones for you too, but when you're watching the Raptors now play these top-tier teams, because they're not going to have as many opportunities as earlier in the season, like I still think they have the third easiest schedule, what is it with this group that you're most looking to see from them?
I'm pretty confident with the defense at this point. And honestly, even if you just go through last year when they won the title, like their best attribute last year was defense. They were the best defensive team in the NBA. That's why they, you know, they won the title. Yeah, what I'm mostly looking for is how they execute in crunch time. You know, where are they getting the offense from? Are they running their sets crisply? Are guys willing to shoot? Who's on the floor for those moments? And who does Nurse trust? And then, yeah, most importantly, like what Pascal is doing as a number one guy. And, you know, this is, I don't want to be that critical on him because, you know, early in the season, he's had a lot of these moments where even if you think back to that first Philly game, I think the score is tied. In the last minute, he goes right at Al Horford and, you know, just crosses him up, blows by him, and then finishes over Embiid for an and one. And then later in that possession, you know, he ends up stealing the pass from Ben Simmons and going the other way for a dunk. And he had a great game in that game against Philly, I thought, in that first win when Embiid had zero. And, you know, Siakam's had some of these moments. It's just it's sort of a bit of a learning process for him to sort of do it consistently. And, you know, as you guys mentioned yesterday, man, Pascal still did some things defensively that really contributed. You know, the rebounding I thought was really good. Just late in the game, just to close out possessions. Philly's really good in offensive glass. And, yeah, but, you know, I think it's just, you're right, the schedule is a lot easier going down the stretch here, especially before the trade deadline. There's not a lot of tough games to evaluate the team. I mean, maybe on the road on San Antonio on Sunday, but still, it's, you know, okay, maybe that's a tough game, but, like,
you should still win.
You should probably still win that. Yeah, it's not like a facing Milwaukee or Boston or even Indiana, in my opinion. So, you know, it's a little bit tougher to evaluate the team on full strength right now, but at the same time, there's still going to be lots of opportunities for them to play in close games. And in those close games, I want to see Pascal assert himself and be efficient with his offense. And that's mostly it. I feel pretty good about the Raptors as they are.
Yeah, I think they're pretty good. Talking to William Liu.
This is the show where everybody thinks the Raptors are good. All right.
I also think Marc Gasol is really good at both the drinking.
We know, and it's controversial.
And celebrating and playing basketball. But is this the best you've seen him as a Raptor, the way he's played since he returned, Will?
Yeah, he looks so refreshed, man. He just looks the one thing that's been super promising lately, you know, it's in the first half of the season, it felt like Marc Gasol really wanted to take this turnaround jump shot, and it just never went in. Every time he went in the post, he would get in like 10 feet and then turn around and spin and fade and miss the jumper. And of late, he hit two of those against Al Horford yesterday.
Yeah.
And obviously, it was perfect from the field, but he's been really efficient from the post. But, you know, even just three-point shooting is up. Even if you just watch him, like, warm up, the first half of the year, the warm-ups, he just wasn't as sharp on those threes, you know. And now it's, like, automatic. It moved from, like, 50% to, like, a 90% success rate for Mark. So it's, like, he definitely is refreshed. You know, his jumper is working. His defense is always good. And, you know, the more that the jumper is working, the better it is for the team because he can just be on top, direct traffic, help other guys get involved. I thought he had, you know, he gave Pascal the two easiest baskets of the night just by cutting. Just telling Pascal, if you cut here and if you come off the screen, I'm going to hit you with this pass and the defense is going to be screwed. And that's one of the best things about Marc Gasol is that he just makes everyone better.
Yeah, I can't remember. I think it was maybe OG in the first quarter where Gasol's pass was just like so good that I think it caught OG even cutting by like he caught him by surprise. Where he's like, oh my God, you made that pass. Like even Marc Gasol, I think, surprises his teammates at times with just how brilliant his passing out of the high post is when you cut. And yeah, it's truly one of the things I've enjoyed the most watching out of my entire tenure as a Raptors observer is just like Marc Gasol in the high post and what he does and how he operates out of there. It's just like I said earlier, it's lame to say, but it gets basketball bliss for me. We only have time for one more topic. I'll let you choose. What do you have thoughts on that you'd like to share more on today? Whether or not Philly should keep both those guys, Simmons and Embiid, or Zion's debut?
Let's go with Zion's debut.
Okay.
Let's go with Zion's debut.
So we loved it, but we just kind of sucked that a guy who's, you know, that hot at the end of it, you understand they want to protect their asset and the criticism everyone gave to the Warriors, but like, what did you make of their strategy, especially, you know, it is based on, like, they needed him to win the game, and they also would have been more entertaining. Guys red hot at the end of the game, they pull him.
Yeah, I mean, it was a little awkward. Definitely a little awkward. But I do think they got to think long term. I mean, what was funny about the game is that it seemed like the game itself actually didn't matter. It was just what Zion did.
Yeah.
Like, it was like, oh, man, you see a million videos on Twitter about his first basket. And you're like, wow, I got to click this. Yeah. And it's like a putback. And I'm like, why? Why is there a million videos of a putback? But he definitely did turn it on in the fourth quarter, obviously. The three-point shot, I don't think he could actually shoot that well. But, damn, if he can hit threes, then it's over for the league. Yeah. He actually just look at the way he bodied Jakob Poeltl on some of these plays. Jakob is like a legit 7 feet. Obviously, Raptor fans know about him. But yeah, Zion at 6'4", 6'5", at most, he's just bodying these guys. Like, they're just bounced off of him. And he gets these rebounds. He's so fast in the fast break. He's a really good passer as well. And he can finish stuff around the rim. And if he could hit that three, honestly, that's such a devastating offensive weapon. I thought it was just really fun, to be honest. And I was really happy for the guy. Because you never want to see, you know, someone that promising, that brilliant, be sort of derailed by injuries, especially early in their career. And, you know, I don't know if he lived up to the hype necessarily just in that one game, because I don't really think he's going to be a guy hits 4 threes a game. But ultimately speaking, it was just super exciting. I think it was nice to see the Pelicans fans have something to root about. And, yeah, that's a fun team. I hope they really do chase that 8th seed and try to sneak into the playoffs, because it would be really, really great to see those guys.
Yes, give me Zion in the playoffs. And that's what I love about watching him, right, is that – even the putbacks, even like he's the most exciting rebounder I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It's like when he grabs a rebound, you're like, ooh. Like, there's just a different spring to him, man. I love watching him. And yeah, it just sucked seeing him, because yeah, the moments where he was out of that game last night, I was like, all right, I'm going to go get a snack.
Oh,
like,
dude,
it's like an intermission.
It's like the non-Zions are touching the ball. You're like, couldn't be me.
Pass, hard pass. Yeah, like ruin the rest of the Pelicans.
Will, appreciate the time as always. Thanks, buddy.
It's great, buddy. Thanks.
All right, thank you.
It's Will Liu of Yahoo. Yeah, we're watching that game. I don't think... Well, I mean, I guess fans of both teams were, like, interested in the result of the game.
Yeah, were they, though?
But
how many Pelicans
neutrals
fans?
Could
how
not
many Pelicans
have cared
fans
less.
Are there?
Yeah.
45 before
Dude,
Zion?
That's the thing. Yeah, not to... I mean, we had a bit of this conversation off the top, but it's like, you're in the entertainment business. Mm-hmm. You have a fan base that's not exactly exuberant, right? Like, they're not packing that barn. He's your one shining beacon of hope. You get
Brandon
this injection of energy, right? Like, he hits those 4 threes, place is going bananas, even if it's 7,000 people in the building, and you're like, ah, but that's it. That's all you get tonight. Numbers, the minutes will be up later in the season. You got to figure. When we come back, Joe Osborne of Odd Shark. It is Good Show. Ben Ennis, JD Bunkus, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
More of Good Show with Ennis and Bunkus on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Ennis, JD Bunkus. It's bye week. We'll do lots of Super Bowl next week.
How dare you say it's the bye week?
Yeah, sorry, it's Pro Bowl week.
Oh, I gotta tell you, that. How much of the Pro Bowl do you think you've watched in the last, say, decade? I used to watch, remember when they were supposed to be dodgeball? And I thought that was a cool little gimmick. But then they kind of butchered that, too. No one was even really trying. It'd be fun to see NFL players play dodgeball for real, but they obviously didn't care. It was in a small little thing. I used to like I remember the first skills competition where they dropped a football from a drone and guys were catching it. It was always fun to watch receivers do the catch drills.
Yeah.
It used to be fun watching some quarterbacks throw on those little courses that they would set up, the accuracy courses.
Yeah.
But the game itself is as, if not more putrid than any of the other All-Star games. If I had to do power rankings, I would say NBA All-Star game is the best. No question about it.
Yeah.
MLB is 2.
Mm-hmm.
And then NHL Pro Bowl essentially the same trash?
I would say because Sportsnet has the rights to the game. The NHL All-Star game is by far the best.
I meant trash like when the kids say sick.
Yeah.
Like it's great. No, yeah. It's really fun.
I'd rather watch the All-Star game than the Super Bowl.
Oh, me too.
All right, let's bring in Joe Osborne of Odd Shark.
Who also has that same opinion.
What's up, Joe?
Hello, guys. What's shaking?
Nothing, just speaking lies, as we normally do. Yeah. Speaking of liars and cheaters.
Uninformed lies.
Yeah, that's right. The Astros, they still have a pretty good baseball team, despite the fact that they're still working on getting a manager. What is this scandal done to their futures as far as World Series odds?
Not a whole lot, really. They still have the third best odds. They're 7-1 to win the World Series. That's right behind the Yankees, who are the favorite at 3.5-1, and the Dodgers at 6-1. And, I still like them to get into the playoffs here, and that's half the battle. You know, their division is still pretty shallow. You could argue that the Angels are maybe a little bit better because they got Rendon, but they're still extremely top heavy and they have no pitching whatsoever. That said, I think the Astros might be a little bit worse than they were last season. They might be a little thin at certain pitching. Of course, they got rid of Gerrit Cole. Wade Miley's gone. He fell apart down the stretch, but he was pretty good through most of the season there. You take a look at Verlander and Greinke. They're both 36 years old, so they're going to get worse before they get better. And lots of injury issues, too. Springer, Altuve, Correa, in and out of the lineup quite a bit last season. Plus, they won't have that little camera out in the outfield in their home game so they can know what pitchers are coming, right? So I like them still to get into the playoffs. I don't think they win the World Series, though.
I don't think you can bet on the Astros because then you're ruining the entire fun of the season. Even if you're the sharpest of sharps and you think that this has somehow created some value,
sure.
It's like, yeah. Well, congrats. Now you have to spend 162 games your entire summer rooting for the Astros.
Go Astros!
Now this is the other problem with baseball. It's the, like, that was the one thing we had, was the Astros to beat the Yankees.
Yeah.
It's like, now it's Astros and Yankees, and the Yankees are the team we root for, the team that took Gerrit Cole from the cheaters. Like, it's never been so incestuously complicated. Like, I hate it.
Yep.
Baseball is canceled next year unless the Blue Jays are good.
Go Angels.
No, it's brutal, yeah. No. I would love to see the Blue Jays I think 500 is a realistic goal for the Blue Jays, but, you know, they're a team, no more excuses for the Blue Jays. We've seen the Tampa Bay Rays be competitive in that division. It was nice to see the Jays spend a little bit of money. Now let's win some ball games.
All right, before we let you go, yes, it is the Pro Bowl. Do you touch this thing? What do you do with this?
Yeah, my theory for kind of these all-star games, especially ones with a spread, is just take the underdog. Why wouldn't you take the underdog? You have no idea what the motivation of these guys is going to the game. You have no idea who and who isn't hungover going into these games. So the NFC is a +1.5-point underdog. I will not spend a second watching this game. I don't think I'm personally going to bet it, but there's always people who want some action in, right? And there's no NFL football this weekend besides that. So I would definitely lean the underdog just because of the hangover factor. And there's no reason for the AFC to be favored by 1.5, right? In my opinion, anyways.
No, of course not. That's that's sound logic. I like it. Joe, thanks as always, buddy.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
See you too. It's Joe Osborne of Odds Shark. When we come back, Good Show's Leafs Hour, brought to you by Drive Auto Group, fueled by customer expectations. Sean Tierney next. It's Good Show. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Now back to Good Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
It's a good show. It's Ben Ennis. It's J.D. Bunkus. It's 11 o'clock. How are you? It's twice I've done that today. Don't know why. All right. Eli Manning.
Some people think you're very polite for asking.
That's true. Eli Manning, it is reported, will announce officially his retirement from professional football tomorrow. seemed pretty evident considering, you know, his family was in attendance for final games of his season this year. But yeah, it's officially coming to a close.
Well, some people thought it just might be his last game as a Giant.
Yep. But there was a lot of speculation that it was for sure going to be it for him because, I mean, there's an argument that Philip Rivers ain't a starting quarterback, at least top 15 caliber guy.
But at least we've seen it in the last 4 years.
Right. Eli's best days are well behind him, and how good were his best days is a question that maybe we'll address right now because the conversation has already taken place. I think probably started when he lost his starting gig in New York about whether he would be a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, so I don't like to make it seem like the Hall of Fame debates always happen where if you don't think someone's a Hall of Famer, it means you think that they're like not very good at all or whatever, blah, 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 blah. Eli Manning is forever a winner. He is a winner. He won 2 Super Bowls, and both of which came against one of the greatest teams that's ever existed, in my opinion, the greatest dynasty, against the greatest head coach and against the greatest quarterback of all time, and against arguably, you know, even though they didn't win that one game, the greatest team in all time, the 2007 Patriots. You can't take away the fact that that guy is a winner, that those accomplishments are incredible, and that Eli Manning will always be known first and foremost for winning those 2 Super Bowls. But that's it. That's the prize. And, like, whenever people talk about Eli Manning being a Hall of Famer, I think about Ngatu from Zoolander.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
He's not a Hall of Famer. He's never been a Hall of Famer. Eli Manning is a winner. He is a winner. He is a winner. He is a winner. We'll always remember him for those 2 things. But you know who else won Super Bowls? Nick Foles, Joe Flacco, Brad Johnson, Trent Dilfer, Jim Plunkett. Like, bad quarterbacks or mediocre quarterbacks have won Super Bowls before. It can happen. Eli Manning has never been a counting stats guy. We can't look at touchdowns and passing yards anymore because they've become irrelevant in this era. Like, he's 8th in passing yards all time. If Ryan Fitzpatrick plays 1.5 more seasons at the rate like he did last year, he'll pass Jim Kelly, he'll pass Steve Young, he'll pass Donovan McNabb. Matt Stafford is less than a full season from passing Joe Montana. Like, we can't do it this way anymore. You have to remember who are the greatest quarterbacks in their era. Who dominated? Who on a night-in, night-out basis was brilliant? Who are the best quarterbacks? If the Hall of Fame means something, and I said yesterday that ultimately they should just put people in when it comes to the Larry Walkers of the world, right? Because it means something to them. I don't think the Hall of Fame is going to mean more to Eli Manning than those 2 wins. He made the playoffs 6 times in his career. 6. Okay? He won 2 Super Bowls. The other times, he lost every single one of those first games with a 3-7 touchdown interception ratio. He led the league in interceptions 3 times and wasn't exactly Brett Favre. And while this is not a perfect stat, here are his quarterback rankings year over year. 2005, 24th. 2006, 19th. 2007, 20th. 2008, 18th. 2009, 10th. 2010, 17th. 2011, 7th. Oh, he's high this year. He's between Matt Schaub and Alex Smith. 2012, 14th. 13, 2013. He was dead last among qualifying starters. 14, he was 15th. 15th, he was 13th. 2016, he was 22nd. 2017, he was 27th. 2018, he was 21st and benched. And 2019, he didn't qualify because, again, he was benched. So over a 16-year playing career, he was top half only 4 times in passer rating, peaking at 7th, top 10 twice, and in the bottom 10 3 different times. That's not a Hall of Famer, folks. It's not a Hall of Famer. He was a good quarterback. He was a solid quarterback. He was one of those guys that genuinely, if we debate who was clutch, you can make the case that Eli Manning had a bunch of really clutch moments. He was brilliant in 2011. Like, everyone will remember beating the 07 Patriots, but 2011 is the Eli year where he actually elevated that team. 9 touchdown passes, only 1 interception on the road to the Super Bowl. But not everyone's a Hall of Famer just because they win. And not everyone's a Hall of Famer just because they win as a quarterback.
Yeah.
What he gets for the winning is the bleeping ring, not the call to Canton.
Well done. I would love to disagree with you.
What's the case for? Other
Here's
than
the
rings.
Thing. That's the thing, right? Anybody, you're telling on yourself if you say anything other than the Super Bowl rings, because there's no other statistic that you can look at.
Mm-mm.
Other than like, well, he was on the, he played a lot, like he didn't get hurt a bunch, and he was an Iron Man. That's okay. Congratulations. The only argument is the two Super Bowl rings and being one of 12 quarterbacks to have multiple Super Bowl victories. But you mentioned that that's not unprecedented either. Now he has Super Bowl MVPs in both of those victories, just different than Jim Plunkett. But it's like, he's not the first ever to have multiple Super Bowl rings as a starting quarterback in multiple seasons. Plunkett has that. He's not unprecedented. And this is the only sport where we'd ever have this debate because it's such a small sample sport, right? You only play 16 regular season games. You maybe play, if you have a bye, you play 3 postseason games. That's it. Like, it's over. It's done. Like, Robert Horry is not getting into the Basketball Hall of Fame despite having 7 rings. Right? Like, that's just not happening. There's
and Eli had more of an impact on winning, even though Horry hit a bunch of huge clutch shots. But yeah, no, the Lakers would get eliminated if Robert Horry doesn't hit that one shot where it gets tipped out from Shaq. Like, you can make the case that that's just as impactful as making the play that you throw it downfield to David Tyree.
Yeah. And part of it is playing in New York, no question.
It's all about playing in New York, and all question. And
well,
the name, yeah. Playing in New York. 2 Super Bowls. No. That's the case for Eli Manning.
And it's not just the 2 Super Bowls. It's who those 2 Super Bowls were against.
If anything, Eli Manning's Hall of Fame candidacy rests upon this. How great the Patriots are.
Like, yeah.
This is a testament to the Patriots more than it is Eli Manning.
For sure.
The Patriots are so amazing that if you beat them, we're putting you in. But let's be real here, too. Like, man, 2007, when they beat the Patriots, the story of that team, we get so bogged down when we look at things of like it was just a quarterback.
It was the pass rush.
It was the pass rush and the defensive line.
Of course it was.
Are you putting all those guys in?
And then it took like one of the most historic catches in the history of the game.
Just saying that it doesn't mean Eli Manning sucked. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that you're a jerk for pointing these things out. But there's got to be some standards to this thing. Mm-hmm. And they simply can't be winning. Otherwise, just put Brad Johnson in. Put all those guys that I mentioned. Because bad guys can win Super Bowls, or mediocre guys have the ability to win Super Bowls on good teams.
Well, if it was just one, there'd be like, it would be rock solid that, okay, lots of like literally bad quarterbacks. Like, dude. Trent Dilfer is not a good quarterback, and he has a Super Bowl
backup quarterback anymore.
Right. So it's the second one.
Jim Plunkett has 2, does he
That's
not?
That's what I just said.
Right.
Like, obviously, we're listening. Sorry, but yeah. Plunkett has 2, and with 2 separate teams. But yeah, Jim Plunkett has 2, right. and the difference.
We have a precedent.
But the difference was. Yeah, Eli Manning was more a part of those Super Bowls than Plunkett was. He has 2 Super Bowl MVPs in those 2 victories Eli Manning has. But yeah, that's the thing. So he wins 1 extra Super Bowl, and all of a sudden, the rest of his career is erased. The way I view all of these Halls of Fame,
mm-hmm.
whether it's baseball, whether it's basketball,
is the most important.
Or whether it's Pro Football Hall of Fame, I'm not having that conversation right now, is this a person that defined a generation?
No.
When I think back to that generation, am I like, well, that was like, you can't go through that 10-year, 15-year, 20-year period without mentioning that guy is one of the guys that you wanted most if you were building a super team. There's no debate when it comes to Eli Manning.
Like I said,
he was a laughing stock for a couple of those seasons outside of the Super Bowl victories.
Like I said, 1 year quarterback rating, top 10, like inside the top 10, mm-hmm. 1 mm-hmm. in 16 seasons. That's what you think a Hall of Famer is? Can
no.
we please have standards?
Well, that's the thing. If you're citing any regular season metric in your case for Eli Manning, there just isn't one.
And the playoff only, the should only, matter more.
The only case you're making is the 2 incredible Super Bowl victories over the most dynastic pro sports team in North America over the last 20 years.
Yep. I think that it should be counterbalanced again by the fact that outside of those 2 years, he went 0-for-4 with a 3-7 touchdown interception ratio.
Yeah.
Like that it's not as though he was just brilliant lights out every time.
As soon as he got to the playoffs. Yeah. No, it wasn't that. Hey, it's that time of year again. Our friends at Kraft want to know if your community could be the next Kraft Hockeyville. Kraft Hockeyville unites the spirit and passion of Canadian hockey communities while preserving the future of hockey in Canada by supporting local arenas. Who could forget a couple of years ago, Lucan. John Tavares making his Toronto Maple Leafs debut at that small little barn. I mean, the ice was kind of crappy and the sight lines were weird, but that was an awesome way for him to make his Maple Leafs debut. Here's what you do. You nominate your community for a chance to be the next Kraft Hockeyville. The winning community will receive $250,000 in arena upgrades and the opportunity to host an NHL preseason game. It's an awesome contest, an awesome prize for
a deserving community.
Yeah, it's one of the contests, I think. It's just a flawless contest. It injects $250,000 into communities that do exceptionally well with the game.
Mm-hmm.
And who have a true passion that shines above, like, I shouldn't even say shines above, but like that end up winning the contest with all these other groups that actually do the same thing. And the reason why I like this contest and why, you know, we wanted to talk about it just quickly today is that, man, what we do for a living is so much based on just professional sports, professional sports, professional sports. And here's an opportunity where there's actually, like you mentioned, Lucan, an opportunity where a city gets to have, or a town gets the opportunity to shine. And you remember like those grassroots feels. You get to see the people that, and you're reminded by the people, especially as you get older and you get out of touch with it. You don't have kids like someone like me. Maybe you do. You're going to go through these experiences again with your kids. But that reminders of all the people that make sports special, all the people that actually have to sacrifice for kids to do this, and the people who put in just a ton of effort to make it happen. Mm-hmm. And just kind of remembering the people that, I don't know, what happens with me anyways is like I end up remembering the people that you may have not thought were that important as kids, whether it was coaches or people or arena staff, whatever it was that impacted you in that way. It's a good time to celebrate those people. So yeah, Craft Hockeyville, great, great, great promotion, great contest.
Yeah, so get going. Nominations open until February 9th, so you got to nominate your community today. And the way to do that is you visit crafthockeyville.ca. You can find official rules and regulations and share your community story.
Again, $250,000 in arena upgrades.
Yep.
Probably help your community.
crafthockeyville.ca. All right, it's 11:13. It's good show. Sportsnet 5-9 The Fan.
You want to talk Raptors or you want to do Hard or Not?
And it's J.D. Bunkus.
Oh, I also have a Who's the Bad Guy.
You do? You didn't put that in the lineup.
I forgot what it is, though.
Okay, well, so you don't have a Who's the Bad Guy. That was a lie. Let's do Frank's Red Hot.
Okay.
Frank's Red Hot. I put that on everything.
Where's the read about some spices in Frank's Red Hot? We just got a bunch of Frank's Red Hot yesterday, and I put some on. I had a nice piece of meat yesterday. I used a little bit of the powder that we had. Mm-hmm. That stuff is delicious. I didn't know Frank's Red Hot came in a powder form. But anyways, it's the Frank's Red Hot hot take of the day. Today, after a one-game sample, today's Frank's Red Hot take of the day is Zion Williamson is winning Rookie of the Year. And it's one game. And the man hit four threes. He was 4 of 4 from three, despite the fact that he'd never hit more than three in any game in his college career. But this is a narrative award, right? And I know Ja Morant's having an incredible season, and we've been paying attention, and the counting stats are there, and he's 40%+ from three. But all eyes were on Zion. And I would have, like, if Zion started the season at the same time as Ja Morant, and Ja Morant was putting up these numbers, and even if Zion was fine, I think people would have loved to have not taken it away from Zion, but been like, hey, man, this guy is more deserving. But now we've got a guy who has a narrative case of having a body that could potentially not withstand the rigors of an 82-game schedule for his entire career. He's got the sympathy card. We were all watching yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the season, we're on high alert for Zion Williamson. I'm going to be checking box scores every day. Are you going to be doing the same for Ja Morant? Zion Williamson, the 2020 NBA Rookie of the Year, and it started yesterday.
I appreciate that you did Hot or Not today because I didn't have anything genuine other than me remembering what my Who's the Bad Guy was, and it was Gritty related, and my Hot or Not was a little too hot, I think is what it might have ended up being. Yeah, there's 0% chance that's happening. Like, he's just played his first game of the season, and he did it with a workload management. And Memphis guard Ja Morant has already played 38 games. Like, yeah, he's missed 6 this season. That's been the case against him. He's averaging 18 points and 7 rebounds with a steal. And he happens to also be shooting 40% from 3 and nearly 50% from the floor as a guard.
Mm-hmm.
He's rejuvenated that team. They're basically, I think they're sitting either in the 8th seed or they're one game back of the 8th seed now because the Spurs won last night.
Yeah, they're a half game.
Yeah, so if it's a narrative award, he's still going to win the narrative award because what people are going to talk about by the end of the season is, should they have just taken Ja Morant? One, and how unlucky are the New York Knicks that they missed out on both of these guys, even though they ended up getting, you know, really, really good talent, RJ Barrett.
Yeah, I think the Pelicans are now, I mean, despite the loss yesterday, they're only 3.5 games back at the Grizzlies.
Yep.
It might just come down to which team makes it into the playoffs, if either of them do.
Zion won't have played enough games. And again, I think the workload management is going to be so pervasive with him that it's going to automatically disqualify him. I think it's the bigger hot or not here, if I may jump off your take, is this is going to be a real story for the rest of the year. People are going to be talking about what is too much, what is too little when it comes to working Zion and back into the lineup. And that we're going to be discussing what I was talking about earlier, which is how much is too much when it comes to trying to protect athletes from injuries. Because Kawhi Leonard won an NBA championship and he did it by sitting 20 plus games in a regular season. Mm-hmm. And now he's doing the same thing. Last night, Kawhi didn't play. And guess what? His team lost to maybe the crappiest team in the NBA in the Atlanta Hawks.
Trae Young.
Who didn't even have Trae Young. And it's all going to be gravy if the Clippers make it to the finals. And it doesn't matter that they didn't end up with home court against the Lakers or whatever, right? But if they get bounced, and it's because they get bounced in a game seven, you know, things are going to switch. Things are going to swing.
The regular season will be back. It's already back in the Eastern Conference. The regular season is back in a big way in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, it's back between 2 and 6. It's actually huge. I do wonder how these things are going to shift, how this conversation is going to shift. Because you and I have talked a lot about how player empowerment is a great thing for a lot of different reasons, right? Mm-hmm. It's awesome. We want to hear about players' personalities. We want guys to take care of themselves. We want them to have schedules that are conducive to us seeing them for a long time rather than a short time. All those things are true. But it really does feel like Zion could be the tipping point in this. That with Kawhi Leonard having had those injuries and having won, it's going to be one thing. With one of the league's most entertaining products in the New Orleans Pelicans this year, and getting to watch him and Brandon Ingram play, if he's sitting a lot of these games, I do wonder what people are going to say versus like playing your way into shape and how much is too much and protecting an asset. When ultimately, like you mentioned earlier with baseball, guys end up having Tommy John. And a guy that's Zion's size, the way that he's got his springs, the fact that he's already been hurt a couple of times, I don't think that there's an amount of minutes or like playing 2 or 3 extra minutes a night is really going to impact that. Like it's going to happen or it's not.
Yeah. I think he's going to play more than 18 minutes a game.
Sure.
And I think it's different when you're talking about game number one.
What if he ends up playing
missing
this entire season where he only plays like 25, 26?
Yeah.
In a sport where the best guys play 35 plus.
That's a problem. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think he's going to be playing normal starters minutes at some point. It's probably not the next game, but it's probably next month sometime. Mm-hmm. Do you want to do your who's the bad guy or you want to take a break?
I'm going to do who's the bad guy in odds and ends and then maybe get fired.
Okay, great. So stay tuned for that. Also coming up next, Jason Lacanfora of CBS predicting the quarterback shuffle if Tom Brady does, in fact, leave the New England Patriots. It's a good show. Ben Ennis, J.D. Bunkus, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
More of Good Show with Ennis and Bunkus on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Show Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Ennis, J.D. Bunkus. Just noticed you had a little avocado in your salad. I came from the land of avocados. If commercials are to be believed. Mexico, I didn't have a single one. Does that make me a bad traveler? Should I have seeked an avocado? I definitely searched out and seeked some Mexican food. Like I had some tacos, I had some burritos, I had some tequila, I had a margarita. Did not have an avocado. Feel free to weigh in.
It's just, there are days where it's just no surprise that you are a radio host with your impeccable ability to tell a story.
Yeah.
Just the way that you can engage
Thank
people.
Thank you. Yep.
The things that your observations,
things
that you find interesting.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's just, how many awards do you have? All of them? Has there ever been an award cycle where you haven't collected a major broadcasting award? For didn't have an avocado in Mexico. Ben Ennis.
So I think
it was unanimous.
I think the radio awards are like all encompassing. They're like for an entire year, like broadcaster of the year. But I would love it. Imagine they did it like they do in TV.
No, they do it by stories sometimes, though, or coverage.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. No, actually, you walk over to 680 News. They've got actual awards because, you know, they're professionals. They actually, you know, put in the work. Don't talk about avocados. But imagine.
They pay the bills.
Yeah, you want to know the reason we're all able to keep our jobs is because, you know, there's some radio stations that make money, like the news one. But yeah, I would love it. That would be so awesome if radio had like very individual segment awards. It's like, yeah, most unique segment. Maybe we did it for Death of a Take or something.
Best guess.
Or yeah.
Jason Lacanfora.
Take Safe Space. Yeah.
This is opportunity to win that award.
Yeah.
What's up, Jason? You ready?
Yeah, for your consideration. Yeah. Yeah. You're going to be best guest. All right. Jason Lacanfora, kind enough to join us of CBS, has a story out now. Every NFL team's projected 2020 starting QB, where Tom Brady could land and what it means for the other 31. Maybe before we get to that, though, Jason, we just had a spirited conversation about Eli Manning. Where do you stand on the Eli Manning Hall of Fame debate?
I mean, I stand that it's a moot point because he's going to the Hall of Fame. I mean, there's no question about it. I don't take part in that process, and I think it's incredibly flawed and not nearly transparent enough and involves too many tit for tat. You do me a favor on this guy, I'll do you a favor on that guy. I don't agree with it at all, but I know, you know, pretty much everybody who's involved in it, and there's no way Eli Manning's not going in. And I'd be stunned if he doesn't go in the first time. So, you know what I mean? Like, we can debate it, or, you know, we can go back and forth about it, but I'm just telling you, it's a moot point. He's going to go in, and if it's not 5 years from now, it'll be shortly thereafter. Personally, I mean, I don't have a problem with him going in. Would I vote for him the first time? Probably not. You know, I think there's a lot of, you know, things that go into it. The last name, you know, where he played, you know, the fact that he was kind of always a media darling. There's a lot of things that really don't have to do with football that I think aid his cause and will lead to him getting in more swiftly than maybe he deserves. But he's in the top 10 in yardage. You know what I mean? He is Peyton Manning's little brother. He is Archie Manning's son. He did win 2 Super Bowls with the New York Football Giants. He's going in.
You brought up something there, though, at the very end, the yardage. And I pointed out earlier when we were discussing it that touchdowns and all these statistics have gotten so out of whack that I don't know how voters or how we're ever going to be able to parse these things. Like this, if Matt Stafford plays half of a season next year, he's going to pass Joe Montana in passing touchdowns. Like there's very, very – like Ryan Fitzpatrick, if he plays a season and a half, that's it. He is – like easily slam dunk going to pass the following names when it comes to touchdowns: Steve Young, Donovan McNabb, and Jim Kelly. Like, did you ever get the impression when you watched Ryan Fitzpatrick that he was in the same class as those guys? Like,
no. I'm with you. I think you have to look at the game has changed so much, and the volume in the passing game has so greatly expanded through my lifetime that you really have to look at metrics like yards per attempt, yards per completion, touchdown percentage, right? What percentage of this guy's passes went in the end zone? Interception percentage, because it works both ways. Raw interceptions are going to be up, but it doesn't mean that these guys are infinitely less accurate. In fact, they're more accurate than ever before because overall completion percentage has gone up. At the same time, attempts have gone up astronomically from, say, the early 80s to now, even the early 90s. To now, even the early 2000s to now. So, you know, I think people have to be smart about how they use those metrics. But the bottom line is, as regular season quarterbacks, you could very much make the comparable for Eli Manning, Vinny Testaverde. Like, that's not an extreme example. Like, that's not me being cute or coy. Like, that's kind of who he is. They both compiled a lot. They both threw a lot of picks. They both probably got propped up a little bit because of the markets they played in. And Vinny coming out of the U at a time when it was kind of a factory. And then, you know, Eli had 2 transcendent postseasons. And so I get it. I think they're going to have to be smart about how they evaluate some of these things going forward. I never felt like Eli was ever close to being a top 25 player in the league.
No.
ever. You know what I mean? And there was never a year where I was like, the season ended, I'm like, give me more Eli. You know what I mean? Like, there's times where it's like, damn, I'd love to see Calvin Johnson, you know what I mean, high point the ball one more time. Or, you know, wow, wouldn't it be awesome to see, you know, Emmitt Smith go up the middle one more time. Or, you know, LaDainian Tomlinson take a screen pass 85 yards. Like, never once was I like, I need more Eli in my life. But but he's going to the Hall of Fame. I get it.
Oh, I don't get it. And I think it's actually like, I do this now where I'll be like, yeah, sports fan intelligent test. It's like, if you just think Eli Manning should go to the Hall of Fame, it's like, well, based on what? Like, he did win those two rings, but like, what's his defining characteristic as a player? Like, when you think about Eli Manning 5 years from now, what you're going to think about is his 1,000-yard stare on the sideline.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. You're not going to think
dumbfounded.
About,
like, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm with you, but when it's not, again, because the process itself is flawed and it's very much a human game and it's very political inside those, you know, meeting rooms that nobody's allowed to talk about. Come on, these are reporters. Like, they should be the ultimate in transparency. You know, I'm just being real. Like, he won two Super Bowls in New York. Like, the New York guys and the guys who really like Eli are very powerful in that room, and there's no chance he's not going in. And by him retiring when he did, right, Brady's still playing, Breeze is still playing, Fitzgerald's still playing, Adrian Peterson, he's trying to compile. He'll take, you know, $100,000 a game somewhere next year to just keep tacking on yards. So, you know, you look at surefire guys, well, he's not going to have to compete with them 5 years from now. So it'll probably work out in his favor.
Yeah, can't wait for Eli Manning to go in the Hall of Fame before Tom Brady, Drew Brees. That's great. Like, that's awesome. Okay, so speaking of Tom Brady, you wrote a really good piece on CBSSports.com, and it's basically every NFL team's projected 2020 starting quarterbacks should Tom Brady land somewhere else. And I love thought experiments like this. That's why we wanted to talk to you today. But it seems like you're more convinced than others that this Tom Brady could leave New England thing is real.
It's real. I mean, there's no two ways about it. I mean, he sold his house. He structured his contract in a way that it automatically voids and you can't apply a franchise tag. He sat there all year and sort of brooded, I'll say, while Antonio Brown, while the owner cuts Antonio Brown. And Josh Gordon's going off the rails, and, like, you're getting me Mohamed Sanu. Okay. Like, San Francisco's getting Emmanuel Sanders, and you know what I mean? Somebody might get A.J. Green. Now, it turns out the Bengals were just completely backwards. But, you know, there were other things that maybe they could have done. Like, we're going into the season, and our best tight end is Ben Watson, and he's suspended for 4 games. Like, or what is it, 6? I can't remember. It might have been 6. Regardless, like, so what do I have to play with here? And, like, Belichick, how long are you sticking around? You can't get a square answer out of him on that. And, hey, Mr. Kraft, like, when's your son taking over? Like, how long are you in this for? And, I mean, this is a unique offseason for him in a bunch of different ways. And I can tell you, nobody in that organization is pounding their chest saying Tommy's definitely going to be here, you know, March 20th. They're not doing that at all. They're making contingencies. Now, Kraft is confident, but he's not doing a team-friendly deal with Kraft before the market opens. It's not happening. He wants to see what else is out there. He's earned the right. You know, human nature alone, at some point, when you're the GOAT, wouldn't you want all these other billionaires to tell you how great you are? Like, wouldn't you want to just have that opportunity? And if you go back to Foxborough, so be it. But, you know, and they used to live in Malibu, and Alex Guerrero, his trainer, who he's got all these investments with, is out there. And Tom House, his throwing guy and his kinesiologist, who he's going to need more than ever as he pushes 44 or 45, he's already out there. And he's already out there in the spring throwing to Edelman and his boys and Amendola and those guys at USC. And he wants to be involved in Hollywood in some capacity as a producer, starting his own production company. And his boys, Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, and are already out there. Like, and all the investment people are already out there. And they're building this $5 billion stadium in Inglewood. And the Chargers, you don't have to worry about a supporting cast there. They need a couple offensive linemen. But the tight end, the two outside receivers, Austin Eckler, like, yeah. Tom Brady could do some damage with that. So at the end of the day, will that resonate more than being a Patriot for life? I don't know. At the end of the day, will somebody put an offer out there that Kraft just doesn't feel like he can match? I don't know, but we're going to find out.
Oh, I can't wait for the media maelstrom that all creates. Sounds so delicious.
I just think about pictures of Bobby Orr in a Blackhawks uniform, you know, like, and how these things tend to hold up, the great ones, the greatest ones in different uniforms. And usually it doesn't have the best ending. And
yeah, just, but it's still,
so many of them still go, right? Yeah, and I think that speaks to the sort of the ego part of it. And I mean, how many bands, like great bands, keep together the way you've sort of had Belichick and Brady and McDaniels for almost 20 years. And Josh went for a little while, but then he came back. Like, usually you'd split by now because it's like, no, I'm the star. No, I'm the better songwriter. You know what I mean? And then you go start making solo albums, and then maybe you come back and maybe you don't. Like, it's hard to keep something together that long. And you just will tend to grate on each other. And eventually you reach a point where it's like, I'm going to take one crack at this before I can never do it again somewhere else. You know what I mean? And Johnny Unitas did it. And I mean, you can just go to Joe Montana. Like, you can go on and on. It happens.
So the most interesting fallout for me anyways, it's weird because two of them, one was Dalton, but I think Cam is the sexier name that we should focus on. But it appears that regardless of the outcome of Brady, you believe Cam Newton will stay?
I don't know. I don't think they know yet. But as I sort of went through this exercise, I didn't have a natural spot for him. Now, I ended up putting Jameis Winston in Vegas.
Yeah.
That could be Cam.
Yeah, that's the best.
That could be Cam. Yeah. You know, I just think the health is a big issue. And that's such a question mark that I'm not sure how the timing is going to line up for a trade. You know, it may be difficult, and I think Matt Rhule's going to want to get at least a look at this guy healthy. So I just think that it may be a little tough. And I know he's in his last year of his deal, but Tepper spent $2.3 billion cash for the team and just gave Matt Rhule $60 million for seven. He's not, like, if he's got a franchise Cam Newton twice, I don't think he'd, you know what I mean? If he becomes convinced that Cam's our guy and he doesn't want to do a long-term deal, he can still franchise him twice, assuming the rules don't change in a new CBA by then. So I don't think he's fretting the money or the cap aspect of it. You can always go cash over cap. So I'm not sure that a suitor's going to, you know what I mean, going to develop. There's going to be a natural slam dunk trade. And I also think Matt Rhule may just want to get a look at Cam Newton before diving into the quarterback market next year.
Yeah, that one makes a whole lot of sense. But yeah, I do love Jameis, like the biggest risk-reward quarterback going to Vegas.
Like, that's Gruden. That's the Raiders, right? I mean, that's just like, just bombs away. And he's the opposite of Derek Carr. Derek Carr just wants to check it down to his running backs and find, you know, a tight end 8 yards downfield. He doesn't want to open it up. He doesn't want to extend plays. He's kind of been the antithesis, I think, of what Gruden's looking for. Ideally, I think Gruden would want somebody more athletic than Jameis and more mobile. But I've heard a little bit about Jameis's name popping up out there, so I kind of took a flyer on it.
Well, yeah, but I guess it all stems from whether or not people believe there's a market for Philip Rivers in the way that you see this thing playing out, which is, I don't know, based on his play last year, it feels hard to believe that anyone would look at Rivers and say, well, you're going to be the difference for us.
I hear you, and I am a Rivers skeptic, but they're not always making cold, hard football decisions there, you know. And there's also this sentiment in the coaching community that, well, look, they've been churning through coordinators out there, you know what I mean, with the Chargers, and, you know, Anthony Lynn's more of a running back guy, and I can get one more great year out of him, you know what I mean? And if you're Bruce Arians, I think you're looking at Philip Rivers and you're saying, you're seeing the Carson Palmer thing all over again. And if you're Bruce Arians, you know, you might have a 5-year deal, but you got to get a physical twice a year just to keep doing what you're doing. Like, you've overcome cancer. You've had a bunch of health risk. You retired because you didn't think you could really do this anymore. I don't think the proposition of breaking in a young quarterback does a whole lot for BA at this stage of his career. But with the weapons they have there, and he knows Philip pretty well, and look, Phillip's very tight with Ken Wisenhunt. Ken Wisenhunt's very tight with Bruce Arians. I've heard that BA's been asking a lot of questions about Rivers. And it would make sense. It's very close to Alabama, Rivers' home. You know, I was hearing this stuff before Rivers decided to move to Florida. That kind of makes it maybe even a little more, you know, maybe nudges things a little more in that direction. And, look, the Indianapolis Colts will also have some interest. I just don't know that they're going to be able to move Jacoby Brissett. And if they can't move Jacoby Brissett, and you got him there at $16 million, like, can you really do – I mean, you could always do a three-year deal with Phillip. That's really a one-year deal. But for salary cap purposes, you get a little relief and call it a three-year deal. There's ways to do it. But those are the two teams that I think will have interest in Phillip Rivers. And we'll say, you know what, he still makes a lot of top-line throws. And he's still smart. And he's still a leader. You know, and maybe we catch lightning in a bottle for a year.
Jason, it was a great piece, and we appreciate you coming on to talk about it. Thanks.
My pleasure. No worries. Have a good one.
You too. Jason Lacanfora, CBS. So whether you have Tom Brady leaving the New England Patriots or not, like, it seems apparent at this point that he's going to at least talk to teams. Like, he's going to take meetings. Like, that week or two or however long it takes, it's going to be wild, man.
I don't like talking without knowing, but I'm still going to say this.
You never know, and you always talk.
No. I'm pretty sure there's something with Brady's contract.
Yes, there's a poison pill. They get a dead cap hit, I think, of $15 million.
Yeah, it's either between $13 and $15 million. And that, if that ends up happening, it makes it extremely difficult for him to come back. So if people like Jason are saying that he's going to want to hear these pitches, it's like he better be ready for what he's going to hear and be ready to accept what he's going to hear, because it makes it really, really difficult for him to come back to New England.
Oh, you're saying that even if he doesn't sign, once they get to the new calendar year in a couple of months, that automatically the dead cap hit. Mm-hmm. See, my understanding is if he leaves the Patriots, that's only the time that they get nailed with that. It's if he even explores free agency.
I think it's that if he explores free agency, that's what they get hit with, and they sign him, and it gets really complicated with the poison pills of his contract. Like, he really did design this thing so that they couldn't franchise him, like Jason said, and so that if he wanted to get out of it, he'd be out of it. I don't know, man. I just keep thinking about it. Like, I know egos play a part of this, and there's all kinds of different factors of, you know, living and outside of football, right? We talked about with the Leafs earlier today, is that you forget sometimes, as cliche as this is becoming to say, that these guys are human, that they do have interest outside of the little window we get into their lives. And if he wants to pursue, like, it sounds like he kind of wants to do the LeBron thing.
That's the obvious comparison. Yeah. I mean, it's the same city. And it's not like, and again, LeBron, so he had 1 year of not winning, but mm-hmm. he didn't go to L.A. just to do the movie thing. He went there to win.
Here's
like,
the difference.
He didn't plan on that happening last year, and it only lasted a year.
LeBron's still in his post-prime.
Yep.
He got to play with Anthony Davis, mm-hmm. and the Lakers have a brand.
Yep.
They have so much of a brand that Kawhi Leonard and Paul George went to the Clippers, and nobody cared other than the people who took their time to spout hateful things at them, like Ice Cube and all those fans that went to L.A. To the Rams game to boo them. I don't even think the Chargers is the premier brand in L.A. I think that's still the Rams, and obviously so. And I don't know, man. You get McDaniels back, bring back a receiver, work with Belichick, the greatest coach of all time. There's too many reasons to stay. Figure it out, Tom Brady.
Well, and plus, you might be headed to a division with the reigning Super Bowl champions.
Come on. Yeah, you're going to go up against Pat Mahomes area? Is like, are you going to be in your shootouts with Pat Mahomes?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Hunter Henry, when he said the tight end, too, is also a free agent, because I want the Seahawks to get him, even though he's a Band-Aid and he gets hurt every 15 minutes.
Sure does. All right. That'll be fun to monitor, though. When we come back, odds and ends. It's a good show. Ben Annis, J.D. Bunkus, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Now, back to Good Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
While I finish my lunch.
Oh, so I won the award for the last segment, and J.D. Bunk is throwing his hat in the ring for radio award. Most food consumed during one live radio segment.
I would never win
segment.
That. I would never win that, because you guys, anytime there's free food here on the perch.
Yeah, but not on air. Not on air.
Pretty sure.
Nah.
We had pizza one
nope.
day,
Mm-mm.
and you were just slamming it in your face. No. Like, it's really good.
No. What are you talking about?
You did the live pizza review?
In my life, I've never once
Fine.
Taken to a live microphone with any morsel of food my mouth. You've done a segment with gum.
Yeah, I do it all the time with gum.
Yeah, that's messed up, man.
I like gum.
Yeah, I love gum.
Yeah.
I do gum in my own personal time.
I'm someone who, when he doesn't have a pack of gum, it's like I've left my phone at home. Like,
oh, really?
I really want gum. Yeah, gum is the best.
I'm not that obsessive. I like fruity gum.
I'm going to start with this then. McNabb and T.O. are back at it. This happened, how many years ago was their feud? It's like, it's so old that I don't even really want to know kind of thing. Like, what Super Bowl was that? 06? 05?
So, 07 was undefeated season. Hold on.
Hmm.
1 second.
You guys Google for me, please. Either way, it's in a long time ago. And basically, Donna McNabb went on a show on Bleacher Report and said that he and T.O. still to this day don't talk, and that he still blames T.O. for fracturing the team's relationship. And
2005, yeah. The 04 season.
Yeah. I don't see it that way, McNabb. You bring it up just reminds me about what a loser Donna McNabb was. Like, you had a diva receiver and you couldn't figure it out. He was doing sit-ups and push-ups in a driveway, and that sent you into some state of, this is just, I'm going to fracture the locker room. I'm going to fracture the dressing room. You're the leader of this team. Other groups have always had diva receivers. Like, go through a lot of different championship winners. Other guys made it work out. Terrell Owens, say whatever you want about him, he's one of the best three at his position all time. Donovan McNabb is not. And that's all that makes me think about. Guy who speaks up first and who makes this feud public in the first place always looks worse. If I would have been T.O.'s PR team or whatever, if he has one, I would have said, please don't tweet, because he tweeted and it made it worse.
He has a podcast, apparently, too.
But yeah, like, I mean, who doesn't? But why would this still be a relevant thing? Like, I can't believe that these guys are so petty that they would still be doing this. Yeah, man, 15 years later. Sad. It's really sad.
So you talk about, a couple of times you've mentioned it, sports Rorschach test or sports intelligence test. I kind of feel that way about Terrell Owens. Like, if you are so vehemently opposed to Terrell Owens.
Speaking of Hall of Fames being irrelevant, like, Terrell Owens not getting in year one.
Exactly. Like, if you're one of those people that's like, yeah, that's right, okay. Terrell Owens, you with, like, no rap sheet, and you just, like, you lifted some weights in your driveway, and you were, like, maybe a bit difficult to deal with, the popcorn, and, yeah, you've had some comments with the media.
In my lifetime, there have been a few dominant receivers who I would say would have been the best of the best. I never really saw Jerry Rice. Yeah. Like, I saw Seahawks Jerry Rice, you know, like Raiders Jerry Rice. I didn't see, like, prime Jerry Rice. I saw Terrell Owens, though.
Yep.
And I've also seen Randy Moss.
And you know what? Terrell Owens never did. Didn't dog it on Roots, which Randy Moss definitely did with the Oakland Raiders.
This is, it's up for debate. You can pick whoever you want, blah, blah, blah. For my money, I would take T.O. over Randy Moss.
T.O. was incredible.
It's very close, but it's there. And Calvin Johnson goes in that conversation, too, of, like, in his prime of primes, Calvin Johnson was that guy. But those are the three dudes. There have been guys who've been great, who've had really high ceilings, like Larry Fitzgerald, I always remember as being an all-time great one. But there's not that many TOs, man, and who play with that level of physicality and just do it for that amount of time. There's lots of Donovan McNabbs, though. Like, lots of guys can get to a Super Bowl once, choke, throw bad picks. Right. Break their teams back.
Vomit in a huddle.
Donovan, we're all thinking about you now.
Yeah, all right. We got time for one more.
Mm-hmm. What do you want? Up to you.
Mm. This one's, there's no take about this. This is just shocking. You'll remember 2002 World Series.
I don't.
Okay, San Francisco
You'll
Giants.
You'll remember 2002 World
San Francisco.
Series.
Like, you'll remember this incident.
Off the top of my head.
Dusty Baker's kid was a bat boy. He's so tiny. You were
got hit.
JT Snow saved his life.
Okay, yeah.
That kid was just named to the preseason All Pac-12 team. He's going to Cal next year. It's just putting your life in perspective that it's been that long ago.
That's what you choose. Okay.
All right. That doesn't do it. How about this? Professional Hockey Writers Association midseason award. Good news. Austin Matthews, second in Lady Bing voting. William Nylander, top comeback player of the year. So make the playoffs or not, doesn't matter. Yeah. Some hardware maybe coming to the Toronto Maple Leafs, either way.
So Lady Bing watch.
Yeah. Sleep tightly tonight with that knowledge. We'll be back tomorrow. Bye-bye.